grift that we saw, that it's a climate grift. It was like these green slush funds, unqualified recipients receiving tens of billions of dollars.
You have saved taxpayers a gigantic amount of money.
Last year, we saved $30 billion. Closed a Biden EPA museum that no one even knew about or even visited.
Biden had an EPA museum.
Yeah.
Of course
and
he did.
Congresswoman Delora, I don't even know her name, but she's got the purple hair and she looks like that cartoon character from The Incredibles.
You know, Section 202 of the Clean Air Act, where does it say anything about fighting global climate change? It doesn't. And I'm realizing in this exchange that she actually didn't read the law. The Democrats want to shut down existing power plants. There's nothing cheaper than the stuff that is actually already built. The NESE pipeline, no way that gets built if President Trump doesn't win this election.
What can we hope for without giving anything away?
We believe that you can protect the environment and grow the economy. Applying common sense, following the best reading of the law, actually reading the law.
Hi, I'm Dean Cain, and welcome to the Homeland here on Proud American Studios. Today we are in Washington, D.C., and we talk all things truth, justice, and the American way, and today is no different. Today, I'm honored to be with EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin, who is doing incredible work at the EPA. You are saving taxpayers a huge amount of money, all while cutting ridiculous regulations like a superhero, and I had to say that, of course. Let me just give a little bit of background on you so our viewers know. Military veteran, you served active duty from 2003 to 2007, including a 2006 deployment to Iraq with the 82nd Airborne Division, which I didn't know, and as a military intelligence officer and paratrooper during Operation Iraqi Freedom. So you're not just a pretty face. You're also a lawyer. You served in Congress from New York from 2015 to 2023. You ran for governor against Kathy Hochul and unfortunately didn't win that, but you had the best showing by a Republican in decades. And honest to goodness, New York sure could use you as governor. There's no question about that. But I got to be honest, I'm pretty thankful that you're doing this great work that you're currently doing as EPA Administrator for America. So given that whole journey, and that's a short version, of course, how did you end up as EPA Administrator? I mean, how did that happen?
The president called me up Sunday morning. I actually just got off a Fox and Friends interview with host Pete Hegseth.
Oh! And current secretary, of course.
The president, at the end of the interview, calls me up, and he is just all in on EPA. And I had spoken to the president a bunch of times that week, and some other stuff was discussed, not EPA. But that morning, he just knew exactly what he wanted. And what was the coolest part of it was he didn't just ask me to be at EPA. He had this list of like 15, 20 specific things he wanted us to accomplish. I'm like, wow, that, you know, you do 4 years as president, 4 years to reflect on it. You go through the assassination attempts. You win as well as he did, win all the battlegrounds, a popular vote. And I mean, he just has been so locked in across all the agencies, knowing what he wants accomplished. Now in EPA, because he's been a builder his whole life, I mean, everything from, you know, the permitting front to unleashing energy dominance to helping to bring back the American auto industry, he knew that we could protect the environment and grow the economy. Yeah, so it wasn't just some, you know, 60,000 foot ask. He was like in the weeds instantly. And I said, Mr. President, you like it? I love it. Let's go.
President Trump has been known to make those. It seems like it's a snap decision or something that happens really quickly, but he's obviously put a lot of thought into it and he was organized. It's so interesting that you mentioned the 4 years away. And my theory on that, and I don't think I'm being, you know, like it's a brand new theory, is obviously he got in there the first 4 years, and this place is, it's a weird place to come into, and there's a lot of entrenched folks in there. And I think it seems like he got in there and the people who were there, that sort of deep state, as everyone seems to call it, is they just killed his entire agenda. Now, 4 years to ruminate on it, get ready. He is locked and loaded, so to speak.
Yeah, and with a team of veterans who went through that in that foxhole with him in that first term. And they came at him instantly. I mean, it was, while his hand was on the Bible in January of 2017, they were already lining the streets of D.C. calling for his impeachment. I mean, he hadn't even gotten in office yet. I mean, literally out there with the signs calling for him to be removed from office. And these new people he was coming in, just like as you're trying to get your feet under you, they're instantly utilizing the levers of government, including the DOJ and the FBI. to just make sure that he was never able to get out of the gate strongly. And the coolest part of Trump 2.0, and obviously you still have almost 3 years left of this term,
yes,
is just out of the gate, like day one executive orders. You know, you tell like the EPA in the first term, maybe there was, you know, seven people there on day, you know, as they were starting off, you know, we had many dozens of our team onboarded on the ground out of the gate, just like all the agencies, the people staffed up, the folks with the experience from the first 4 years. But yet this president, especially, I mean, he knows what he wants. Like, and like he called me up Saturday night, you know, Monday night, I spent an hour and a half with him on Tuesday. And I was like, if you were to combine these conversations from the last few days, like the level of importance and detail of EPA actions that he's following up, like we're talking, you know, warranty data for heavy duty, you know, nitrous oxide rules and, you know, regulatory useful life. And like, it's, you think of what we had for 4 years under Joe Biden. Do you think at any point, you know, Joe Biden was calling up, like, you know, the head of EPA and talking about warranty data and regulatory useful life?
I don't think
he
knew who his head of EPA probably was. No, that's insane. That level of specificity is crazy. EPA is a thing that, you know, a lot of folks don't know about. They think, okay, it's just climate change and everything has to be clean. And no idea how the regulations, the amount of stuff that's going on. And I mean, I've seen a number of things that you've talked about. There is a tremendous regulation, over-regulation, I would say, as a person sitting outside. You're cutting regulations like crazy. You have saved taxpayers a huge, like a gigantic amount of money. It doesn't get talked about enough. How much have you saved American taxpayers, and what was it being spent on? I saw, you know, the crony kickbacks and stuff. And this could be a long answer, and it should shock. And it should piss off regular American voters. It pissed me off.
Yeah, EPA's annual operating budget when we came in was about $10 billion a year. Last year, we saved $30 billion. I was like, well, how is that possible? You have a budget of 10, how can you save 30? Well, it's because in 2024, they obligated and spent over 60. And that money was not yet actually spent. So when we were going through the transition period, I was going through my confirmation process. There was this video that came out of a Biden EPA official talking about how they were tossing gold bars off the Titanic.
I remember that.
Yeah, and rushing to get billions of dollars out the door by the time President Trump's inaugurated because they're worried that President Trump was going to come in and he was going to stop it. Well, that's good.
That's yeah, really good.
Yeah, they were onto something. That's true, and that's what happened. But that was like a big siren that went off for us, and I was committing to Congress when I came in. This would be a top priority. I committed to President Trump. The moment I got sworn in, this was going to be a top priority. And through canceled grants and contracts, canceled media subscriptions, real estate consolidation, staff efficiencies, we closed a Biden EPA museum that no one even knew about or even visited.
Biden had an EPA museum.
Yeah.
Of course
and
he did.
You're talking about $30 billion all told. Now, as far as getting into the weeds on those canceled grants, we found examples where you had billions of dollars going through these NGOs that were run by former Biden and Obama officials and Democrat donors, and they were just pass-throughs. They were set up just to receive billions of dollars. And this is one of them was $2 billion that went through this Stacey Abrams connected NGO that like, the president often talks about.
That was worth zero. And all of a sudden,
they got like $100 the year before. They got a $2 billion reward. So last week when I was at my congressional hearings, the Senate APW committee, Senator Bernie Sanders was asking me about this $7 billion program called Solar for All. I'm like, Senator Sanders, when we came in and we started looking through this grant, we were finding grants that were going through up to four different pass-throughs where each pass-through was getting at least 15%. So you can't talk about a dollar as if like that dollar appropriated is a dollar spent on what you're saying it was supposed to go to. It's getting so badly diluted. So we put a stop to all of it. And you mentioned the deregulation. We're doing more deregulation in 1 year than entire federal governments have done in the past across all agencies, across entire presidencies. I'm just talking about at the Trump EPA in 1 year. We just finalized one decision with President Trump. The largest act of deregulation in the history of the United States, $1.3 trillion, got rid of the 2009 endangerment finding, all greenhouse gas emission standards on light, medium, and heavy-duty vehicles that followed, and all off-cycle credits, including what your audience will almost universally despise, that annoying start-stop feature.
Oh,
we got rid of that government incentive.
First of all, that's one of the worst things ever. That stupid start-stop thing drove me bananas. I never owned a car that would do that because I just couldn't stand it. But that's just an example of the overregulation and I'm sure some people made a lot of money on that thing. For a $10 billion budget to save $30 billion, obviously that's a gigantic thing. The graft, you know, the corruption for former officials. We've all, sitting at home, you feel like, man, what is our government spending our money on? What are they doing? How come this is so crazy? It seems like it was just entrenched for the longest time, and you guys are coming in and just shaking up, and that's pretty much why there's the hornet's nest coming after you, I would imagine, all the time. You did talk about the Senate hearings that you had recently in Congress. I have to mention this because it was my favorite moment all last week. Congresswoman Delora, I don't even know her name, but she's got the purple hair and she looks like that cartoon character from The Incredibles. And she asked you questions, and then you started bringing up Supreme Court precedent and Chevron and Loper Bright and major questions doctrine, and she had no idea. And I know you weren't trying to make her look silly, but you really succeeded in making her silly. Please tell me about that, because that was an amazing moment.
Yeah, and at the heart of what she was asking about was that largest act of deregulation that we were just talking about, that rescinding of the 2009 endangerment finding. And she's essentially asking, why did you do it? And I'm just answering a question and saying, I'm just following the law. You know, Section 202 of the Clean Air Act, where does it say anything about fighting global climate change? It doesn't. And I'm realizing in this exchange that she actually didn't read the law. And, you know, I have to follow the best reading of the law. And that's actually a new thing. Your audience would be like, yeah, of course you have to follow the best reading of the law. No, actually, the Supreme Court in recent years, as you just referenced, in Loper Bright, overturned the Chevron deference doctrine. So no longer can an agency head be looking at federal statute and saying, the statute doesn't say that I can't do this thing that I want to do, so therefore I could do it. That was actually the way a lot of these agencies were run. They actually, in the 2009 endangerment finding, the administrator is taking discretion because the law doesn't say that the administrator can't.
So they're really actually writing law or implementing law.
With deference from the courts. They are doing things without the authority of the law. And the U.S. Supreme Court in recent years said, they can't do that anymore. Loper Bright, Chevron doctrine is done. And they also issued a decision in a case called West Virginia versus EPA, which I referenced, which you would think that a former chair of the House Appropriations Committee would be familiar with. This was a really high profile case. And the major questions doctrine says that, you know, essentially, if an agency wants to impose trillions of dollars of regulation, that's what followed after the endangerment fund.
Trillions of dollars.
Trillions of dollars of regulation, that Congress should be debating and voting on whether or not that should happen. You shouldn't just, because you lack the will as a member of Congress, you lack the votes in Congress, that you pick up the phone and you're calling your buddy down the street who runs some agency and be like, so we need you to just do this on your own. We're not going to actually pass a law. And then the people down the street are, you know, like, okay, sure, I'm just going to impose trillions of dollars of regulation. So the Supreme Court in recent years said, no, with the major questions doctrine, Congress should be authorizing it. Now, you have a lot of congressional Democrats who have been talking about President Trump, like on Saturday, they'll go to a No Kings rally. You know, the powerful king, they'll say. If they care so much about separation of power, of checks and balances, of regulatory overreach from the executive branch, you would imagine that they would know about the landmark cases with regards to separation of power of recent years. So it really shows that when they're showing up on that Saturday at some No Kings protest and they're talking about how we need to have a check on the executive branch, that they're full of it. They're just trying to get the people who show up at that event to support them in their next election. Maybe to, you know, donate a few dollars, become a volunteer. They're trying to get votes. But it's not that they've done all of their homework. And they also don't have the courage to lead those people who show up. Like, they're not showing up to be like, hey, by the way, we don't actually have a king. No, they show up there and like, yeah, we have a king. And yeah, these members of Congress, they don't actually read the law. They don't follow what these big Supreme Court decisions are doing. And these are the folks who are elected to represent us. Unfortunately, right now, they're not in the majority. However, every 2 years, the American public gets to decide. And it wasn't that long ago where they were in the majority.
Yeah, that is terrifying and frightening. Now, when they go up there, when she goes up there and or someone like that goes up there and speaks, because you've been on both sides as a congressman and as the EPA administrator. So you've faced it. You've asked the questions. What are they use their 5 minutes? Is it 5 minutes they get?
5 minutes.
They get 5 minutes. So what is it that they do there? Do they really want to ask you questions? It seemed like she didn't know what the hell she was talking about. Are they just trying to get a sound bite? What are they using their time for? It's confusing to the American public.
Well, oftentimes they don't actually listen to the answer because they have 5 minutes and they know that they want to get to particular questions and comments. And they have particular comments that they are planning on utilizing their last 30 seconds to say. So like they have to stay on schedule. You know, so there was this one guy from New Jersey, Menendez, who he asks me a question. I asked, like, are you going to allow me to actually answer the question? Or am I going to just start answering and you're going to cut me off? And his response to me was, I'm just going to go to my next question. I was like, how important was your point and your question? Yeah, and I was just with Sheldon Whitehouse, who's the ranking member of the Senate EPW Committee, and he's talking about how offshore wind is the cheapest form of energy, which it's not. And he's using a figure that doesn't factor in all of the costs because you have to firm it. The all-in costs, because wind doesn't always blow, you have to store it. And he's making a point that's just loaded up with bad information. And now it's time to ask the question, to engage with the administrator of the EPA. And his only question for me was, is 9 less than 18? I'm like, really?
He's a gotcha. He's gotcha.
Like, yeah, of course 9 is less than 18. And I say that, and before I could say another word, wants to go right to the next point. And fortunately, the way these committees work is like you might have some clown with 5 minutes who wants to waste it away saying things that aren't true. Some Senate Republican is going to go next. They have their 5 minutes, and the senator's like, Administrator Zeldin, the ranking member didn't give you an opportunity to answer. Would you like to answer? And they'll start going through it. And, you can get into the weeds because there's a lot of people in the American public that actually want factual information.
What a concept.
So you look at the all-in costs and you start comparing it to all the different energy sources, which, by the way, the Democrats want to shut down existing power plants. There's nothing cheaper than the stuff that is actually already built, that's operating, the infrastructure is in the ground. And for a lot of these states, like you take coal, they say they want to get rid of the fossil fuel industry and they want to replace it with wind, as if this intermittent source, this unreliable intermittent source, is a substitute for baseload power. It's not. It's an intermittent source. It's not a baseload source. And we just went through a winter where a lot of this country was really cold. And for an extended period of time, thank God that these people, these families, had access to reliable power, because we would have had a real problem if folks were forced to rely on wind to make up for taking away all of the other supply that is needed. And President Trump is very much focused on, and he has saved so many clean, beautiful coal plants across this country. He has gotten more natural gas pipelines built. There are more small modular reactors where grounds have already been broken. He unleashed energy dominance with an executive order on day one. He created the National Energy Dominance Council. He meets with his energy team all the time. And just like that first point in that first question you asked me, when we go into a meeting, it's not some 30,000 foot conversation where we're not getting into details. We learned from the very first meeting that the National Energy Dominance Council started meeting with this president. He is in the weeds. He wants to know, what is the status of getting the NESE pipeline built to deliver natural gas from Pennsylvania to 2.3 million downstate New Yorkers? And now we're at the point where the permits came out, ground's been broken, and by the end of 27, the NESE pipeline is going to be delivering natural gas to up to 2.3 million downstate New York families. No way that gets built if President Trump doesn't win this election, if it's someone else who doesn't get into that level of depth to make sure that at Trump speed, this stuff gets done.
Trump speed is, look, I played Superman, you know, I got to speed around the world. And Trump speed is faster than that, the stuff that he's getting. And it feels like he has to. It feels like, you know, just watching it all, like he has to get it done fast. Is it because he's a builder that he knows all that sort of stuff? Is that a big part of it, that he understands energy? And people, it's funny because you say, oh, EPA administrator, oh, that's not so sexy in that sense. Was he saving billions of dollars to American taxpayer? That is very, you're a very sexy man for that. But it's not something you feel right away. I mean, felt the warmth this past winter, and a lot of people did. It's going to take a minute to feel that financially. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I would say one of the best ways that people have started to see the benefits of President Trump's policies right now, as people are paying their taxes, that One Big Beautiful Bill, the working families tax cut, there are a lot of Americans that are very happy to be getting more. And one of the hearings last week, there was this congressman from Ohio who says that's not true. You're not hearing. I'm saying I'm hearing from people who are very happy that they're getting more in their tax return. And you're not hearing that. You don't talk to people. I said, my first 9 months as administrator, I visited all 50 states, plus Canada and Mexico. So the president says I visit all 51 states plus Mexico.
They don't realize how funny he is. Yeah. Good Lord, he's funny.
And to answer your question, it is, because he's a builder. But also, I would add, being president for 4 years, then reflecting on it, then they tried to take his life more than once, and winning as much as he did, that puts this big stamp of a Trump mandate in place. And he also has this 4 year period. Sometimes a president comes in and you might be thinking, like, I definitely have 8 years. I feel confident, like we're starting something that's gonna, but I think at his age, his experience, life experience, oof, he is just so locked in on making the most of every single day. He's not thinking about, what we can get done in year six. He's like, we want to get it all done right now. He wants, and with these plants, I mean, coal plants were about to get shut down. And he saved all across the country, so many of them. And he understands the consequences if we don't act urgently.
If he didn't do that, then we would have real energy issues and people would go it'd be like Europe. I've had a home in Europe for a long, long time. There was a cold winter. People were just dying. People dying from that. And you're like, we're being good, or we're being green, or whatever that is. And green doesn't always work. You need to have that baseload power. Clean, beautiful coal. I love that. Being a California guy, originally, I left California because it went totally insane. So I got out. I'm one of the guys who could afford to get out. There's stuff going on there now with the oil and so on. So is that part of what you're dealing with?
Yeah. So Doug Burgum is the chair of the National Energy Dominance Council. Chris Wright, the Secretary of Energy, is the vice chair of National Energy Dominance Council, which I serve on, and other people do. And we all just work together.
Concept.
Yeah. We all have equities in this, and rather than each agency being siloed off and not working together, the president makes sure that we are always, and now it's just like we're so conditioned. It's like the culture inside the administration is that, not just us, but our teams, like every day.
Team is the word.
Constantly. You're making the comparison between Trump speed and Superman. I'm like, if Kamala Harris would have gotten elected, it's like you'd have been making a comparison like Candy Man from The Living Color. It's like two very different ways of operating the federal government.
I did like Candy Man, though. He was pretty funny. Damon Wayans was
really
good.
Away, but he went down.
Yes, he did. And that's what would have happened.
Yeah.
That's a really apt comparison because that's how I felt. I mean, I was terrified at the thought of that. I do want to pick on Kamala Harris, but I won't pick on her too much. But that the thought of it literally is terrifying to me. And then we get the opposite. We get this team that's working right now, and what you guys are doing is fantastic. Why are the Dems fighting against it so hard? Is it about money? Is
power.
It about power? It is.
Oh, and money. Yeah, you're right. The grift that we saw, that it's a climate grift. It was like these green slush funds. It was like a green new scam. They were rewarding, I mean, the amount of conflicts of interest and unqualified recipients receiving tens of billions of dollars.
Stacey Abrams deserved $2 billion.
By design. I started going through it when I was at one of the hearings last week. It was eight prime recipients of $20 billion of a greenhouse gas reduction fund. And I'm going through the list, and every single one of them is being run by former Biden and Obama officials.
Coincidence? I think not.
Yeah. And this isn't like these weren't longstanding entities where they're coming to the government and saying, hey, look at our immense qualifications because we've been around for, you know, decades, and we have all this experience managing money privately. And it was just like they fill out the paperwork, they stand themselves up, they go to the government, they put their hand out. It was more money than the EPA knew how to spend. And we reined it all in.
Because that money was, I mean, listen, I could create a company, and it would be the Dean company that does nothing except pass through money. And that's literally a gift for being.
Yeah. And one of the big differences is that we don't take money from left-wing NGOs to give it to right-wing NGOs.
And that.
We're giving it to the Treasury. Like, we're giving it to the taxpayer. We're saving this money for the American taxpayer. And I'll give you another example. Environmental justice, like you could define your environmental justice cause as saying there's some community in America that's been left behind. They have some environmental issue that needs remediating. So let's help them. Okay, like everyone's going to agree with that definition. It's like, so what can we do to help? The problem is, in the name of environmental justice, they'll get the dollar appropriated. And instead of spending that dollar on directly remediating the environmental issue, This is a real life thing. We canceled a whole bunch of environmental justice grants, where they were giving the dollar, they were giving money to an activist group that was training other activist groups to come to Washington, D.C. and advocate for that next dollar so that they could go out and be activists. I was like, why would we give that dollar, you know, through that chain of groups if we know that this community needs help? If that's why you're appropriating the dollar, is to fix that issue in the community, then that's where the dollar should go. And it's a very different view. And that's why we canceled all the environmental justice grant funding. Climate justice, they gave $50 million to a group that says that climate justice runs through a free Palestine. And, you know, talking like in Gaza.
That doesn't make a
And for Americans who care about remediating environmental issues in our country, they're like, $50 million is a lot of money. I could think of $50 million worth of environmental causes here in our own country if you're going to spend a dollar for that cause. But yeah, the grift is gone. And the last thing I'll tell you too, because you know, climate change is something that we hear a lot about.
Constantly.
In the name of climate change, the amount of money that they want appropriated for their funds, that's the hoax the president talks about. The control that these politicians want over your lives, that they want to get rid of reliable, durable baseload power, that's the hoax. When they tell you, they make predictions like AOC saying 7 years ago that we have 12 years left of the world.
Not very long left.
We have 4 years and 9 months left, according to that math. That's the hoax. And then if you don't agree with, you know, what she or Al Gore or John Kerry are saying, then you are a climate change science denier.
That's it.
Shame on you. And you're just saying like, well, maybe your adoption of something that is more extreme than the most pessimistic view of the science is something that should be questioned. You know, because there's also optimistic views of where sea levels will be in 2050 or 2100, or where the temperature will be. You know, Al Gore was, you know, for a long time talking about global warming.
Of course.
He just did an interview in California a couple of weeks ago where he was talking about essentially global freezing. I'm like, wait a second. I thought that it was global warming with you. And I guarantee you that if we got the full backstory of why would he be advocating for that all of a sudden, there's got to be money in it for him.
I bet there is, because he made an awful lot of money on an inconvenient truth, which was an inconvenient truth because it wasn't true. And now we've had time to see all those things come out. I mean, it's shocking how much money. I mean, it's just a tremendous amount of money and regulation and all the stuff that affects people every single day. But we don't see it because it's in the weeds. We just know that. You know, you don't have power.
Yeah, we're living our lives. Yeah, we have our family. We have our jobs. You want to be able to get caught up on the news and actually get the news. You too often, though, with these politicians who are supposed to be leaders, they are saying what they believe they need to tell you in order to get you to vote for them in the next election. And this is going to come as a great shock to everyone who's listening to this conversation. But not everything that these politicians say are true.
No.
It's like their pollsters come to them and they'll, you know, in their poll will be like, are you more likely or less likely to vote for, you know, Dean Kane if you knew that dot, dot, dot? And you could fill that in with like the most extreme untrue thing. And people would be like, yeah, I'd be less likely to vote for him. So like now it's time to run my campaign against you. And my pollster is telling me, well, you could say these few things and they're true, but it doesn't really move numbers. You're still going to lose. The only way that you could possibly win is if we say these things, because look how, you know, 85% of the people are less likely to vote for your opponent if they knew that he dot, 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 like these really bad untruthful things. And
cheated on Lois Lane.
Most of these campaigns never happen. Most of these campaigns would adopt that. And I would actually say that one of the most foolish things as far as politics go, one of the most foolish things about using that strategy is your question is really assuming that it's true and assuming that there's not going to be pushback. Because I've had all these campaigns where people are coming at me with stuff that's just not true, probably because their pollster told them it polls well. Now I'm just like, it's not true. And then the people who have to actually form the opinion are like, well, actually, I believe him when he says it's not true. It's like not hard. It really is not hard to push back on things that are so ridiculous. And I think it's a real big disservice to the American public that they can't just get the truth at them all of the time. There's just so much fake news that's out there. And you know, one of the great things about this conversation that we're having is that everything that we're talking about is just raw truth. And, you know, I mean, there's just not enough of it.
Not at all. That's why we're doing this. You know, I'm a huge optimist. I love America to death. I bleed red, white, and blue. Oddly, that makes me an outcast in Hollywood, which is crazy. There's a flag flying from my backyard. You know, if there's a flag there, you might be supporting President Trump and might like America. It doesn't make sense to me. I do feel like we're on this huge comeback, and what you're doing is a gigantic part of it. I'm not saying it's not sexy, because it is sexy when you start talking about the numbers and the things and staying warm and all the things that surround it and the graft and all that sort of stuff. What can we hope for and pray for? What's in the docket for the rest of this short 4 years? Which I'm just hoping we get the midterms all through and we can just push through this agenda. Because I feel like you guys are coming in and just cleaning up an absolutely insanely huge mess. And I'm super excited about it. And so what can we hope for without giving anything away that the other side might want to squash?
Well, first off, I just have to say, you know, conservatives care a lot about the environment.
Yes.
Very much so. And on the 1 year anniversary of President Trump's term in office, we released a list of our top 500 environmental actions from that first year.
Top 500.
We're motivated to keep that pace up. So, you know, when I leave here and I head to the office, it's very important to note that, you know, our core mission is protecting human health and the environment. The first pillar of powering a great American comeback for us is to pursue clean air, land, and water for all Americans. While we are doing that, we believe, as we said in the onset, that the president believes that you can protect the environment and grow the economy. So we are also going to continue scoring wins on the deregulatory front, applying common sense, following the best reading of the law, actually reading the law, and making sure that the people who voted November of 24, who put that Trump mandate into office, are seeing those results that they voted for. An agency that is cognizant of their economic concerns, their economic demands. So unleashing energy dominance, bringing back the American auto industry. We want to make sure that every single day that Americans feel like their voices are being heard. I will continue traveling the country to make sure that I'm hearing directly from Americans all across America.
That makes a difference.
And scoring wins for them every day.
That's huge. Well, God bless you, my friend. Yep. Thank you so much for what you're doing. Thank you. You are a fantastic American. Appreciate your service as
Thanks,
well.
Dean.
And I'm sorry that you're not governor of New York, because New York, well, I'm glad because you're doing some great stuff here, because New York's almost as much trouble as my my California. I tell you. So God bless you. And I hope it continues.
Thank you.
Let's continue winning.